This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon and welcome to Cravings on Joy 94.9. Don't adjust your dial. It's not Pete Dillon, nor am I anybody else. I'm Nathan Miller, stepping in for the injured, the sick, the weary Pete Dillon. It's Beer Week. Well, it's not just Beer Week. It's Good Beer Week, and we're going to talk all things beer. So stay with us for a lovely hour here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. And good afternoon again. It's good beer week in Melbourne here on Cravings, and we love a good beer. So today we're going to meet a chef who'll be talking matching food with beer and some events being hosted for Good Beer Week at the Arbery Bar and Eatery. We're going to meet a woman who is a beer judge who'll be in the middle of judging when we speak to her. She is the beer diva, so we couldn't not speak to her today. Another of the guests we'll meet today buys beer. Not like you and I, but in a big way. Who chooses the beer you can buy at the bar and in the bottle shop at the Grosvenor Hotel. And we couldn't do the show without a brewer, a beer maker. We'll introduce you to Melbourne success story, Callum Reeves, from Cowdew Beer, made right here in Melbourne. Callum also makes Golden Axe Cider and is collaborating with our first guest, Alex Kavanagh. Alex is the head chef at Arbery on Flinders Walk, next to Flinders Station. Good morning, Alex.
Good afternoon, Nathan. How are you today? Oh,
very well. Lovely day outside, and we're talking beer, so you couldn't get any better.
Yeah, it's good.
So you've got three events for the Good Beer Week, correct?
Yep, that's correct. Starting tomorrow.
Yep, and tomorrow is?
With Thunder Road Brewing.
Okay.
We've got our Arbery Burger Bash, so we've got two burgers matching up with their beers.
Okay, and you're known for your double cheeseburger fame, of course.
So we are indeed.
We're going to raise the stakes yet again,
yep.
On the pun. Excellent. So you can head down to the Arbery tomorrow. They've got tasting paddles from the whole Thunder Road Brewery, matching with your great burgers, of course. And you've got something on next Saturday?
Next Saturday we've got a collaboration with Axe Cider. So it's going to be making cider with the brewers.
Okay.
On site, and then the bottles that you make will be available to come back and purchase for the people that do it.
Okay. So, first question, how hard is it to match food with beer? What do you look for?
I guess it's just something that sort of, everyone's different, and it's just sort of a personal opinion, you know. It's always been a long-going thing, matching food with wine and drinks, and it helps the whole experience of the meal. So it's just a matter of having a taste of the beer and thinking, what would I like to eat with it? What would other people like to eat with it? And
yep. So it's as simple as that. Taste. It's getting your hands dirty.
It is.
Excellent.
It's enjoying it.
Excellent. Our second guest we'll introduce after this short break is Alistair Dobbs. And we'll be back with Alex and Alistair right after these sponsorships.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Alistair Dobbs is a 20 years experience in the hospitality industry from the Grosvenor in St Kilda, where he's currently the grocery and liquor manager.
Correct? Yeah, I think something like that. Pretty diverse role in a very diverse business. the Grosvenor Hotel. We, you know, we span two postcodes on Brighton Road. We have a penchant for Victorian beef, Victorian wines by the glass, and also the local craft beer industry, being,
okay.
Being Australian, and just a dabble in the overseas.
Yep.
So I suppose my role encompasses, you know, not just selling, but buying, and, you know, trying to stay ahead of the trends and make sure our customers have a really rewarding craft beer experience when they come to the hotel.
Okay. And so you'd rather focus on and local stuff or national stuff?
I think, you know, domestic being national is amazing. You know, the proliferation of craft breweries in the last 5 years is amazing. Mirrors the wine industry over the last 20 years.
Yep.
And what's really cool is that it's young people that are driving the proliferation rather than, you know, the older people that drove the wine.
Yep.
The wine drive.
So with you mentioned trends, what are the current trends? Are we going to, like, we've had everybody in their backyard was going through the stage that they had to have their own little distillery and make their own craft beer, and everyone thought it was going to be cool to
have
a man bun and a beard and do beer and stuff like that. Are we going to see a cycle of craft beers and go back to?
Oh, we're definitely in an upward trend. You know, understanding that the alcohol consumption itself is dropping. Within that market, craft beer is expanding quite dramatically, and it's at the expense of the main players. So,
okay, so they are taking on the big boys.
The big boys are taking a hit.
Okay, and they feel that?
I think so. Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely, without a doubt.
Yeah,
And you know, the craft beer market is full of some amazing products.
Yeah,
brewers doing, you know, incredible beers that you know do what they say on the label, which is half the battle.
Yep. So. This is going to continue, do you think, or is it going to cycle back to...
It's going to continue massively if you look at the States. You know, in the last 10 years, the craft beer industry's grown 10% each year for 10 years.
Okay.
So if you consider we generally follow US trends, the craft beer industry has a long, long way to go. And I think really exciting times ahead for the industry, without a doubt.
And sustainable.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like with anything... The wine industry saw it. We saw a massive influx of producers, and you know those that weren't particularly good dropped off, and those that couldn't find a market dropped off. Yeah. And now we're left with an incredible industry, and the craft brewing and breweries will follow that trend, I believe.
Okay, and matching food with craft beer and all that boutique stuff. Clearly, I'm not a great beer drinker. Is it? Do you have to keep it man food or, you know, heavy burgers and stuff like that? Or can you get a little bit more fancy when you're matching beer to your food that you serve?
I think it's a good variety. You can sort of go contrast or you can complement it. So some things will, when you eat and then you drink it, sort of resets your taste buds for the next mouthful or the next course. And it's just sort of choosing what's going to be right with that meal.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah, I always imagine, you know, you can either have that really nice sort of light Pacific ale with sashimi or, you know, you head into a nice heavier IPA with a burger or something like that. It's you know, a pretty good experience and broad appeal to both women and men.
Yeah. And your kitchen at the Arbrete, can you describe the outlook briefly? It would have to be, I don't know, the best view from a kitchen in Melbourne, no hands down?
It's certainly up there. staring at the river all day is quite nice.
Yeah, with the trains in the background and looking out over the good-looking people drinking. And
plenty of good-looking people. And
out onto the river. And
it certainly keeps it interesting.
Yeah, awesome.
Actually, I've got a couple of questions.
Yeah, fine.
Tell me, who are the real trending hot boutique breweries?
I suppose if you look at what's going on in the trade, the most significant style of beer is a pale ale. So that's where it's been at for the last few years. That is the biggest bubble. You know, 50% of all pale ale in Australia sold is Cooper's pale ale still. But what's coming is lager and Pilsner-style beers, light, crisp, fresh. And you know, if you look at that, you're talking sort of Temple Brewery doing an amazing
Whereabouts are they?
They're over in Brunswick. They're Power Stance Pilsner, which we have on tap at the Grove, and it's just an amazing beer.
So tell me about where these sort of boutique brewers are coming from. Are they sort of like just springing up in garages in suburban Melbourne?
It starts with what they call gypsy brewing, where, you know, the brewers get a couple of brewers who might have come out of a program of brewing, you know, little creatures, and they want to do their own thing, so they gypsy brew around a couple of different breweries. Then they get a following, then they get a volume of sales, then they get a brewery in an old warehouse somewhere cool that no one ever thought of, and, you know, bang, you've got a great product on the streets, and, you know, it's delivered, by the brewer, and, you know, there's a real authenticity and provenance to it.
Yeah. So how do you guys sort of tap into that market? Because there must be an awful lot that are out there right now.
There's a lot about them coming to us, I think. You know, social media is great for that. You know, social media has broken the barrier of big distribution companies and big companies where, you know, say Barrow Boys, you know, can just jump on our Facebook page, go Grosvenor Hotel, love to come in and show you our new, you know, Peddler's Pale Ale. We go, great. In they come, you know, Ash and Justin, bang, love the product, off we go. We haven't had to deal with a rep, a distribution agency, anything like that, you know, and I think that's really exciting. And it's the same for WA, whether you've got Feral Brewery out of WA contacting people directly, it's great.
So what about you as a sort of the hotelier?
Yeah.
Yeah. What would be your range of these ones that you feel like, you know, that you can realistically manage from the purchase through to the actual, you know, obviously get a bit of a following from the from your punters, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that's the key, isn't it? Be driven a little bit by the customers. So, again, I come back to that sort of pale ale scenario where people love pale ales. So, you know, keep investing in pale ales, no problem at all. Get ahead of that trend. Let's start looking at lagers and fresher styles. But, you know, there is a lot of breweries out there. And half the battle is going through and saying, well, does that beer do what it says on the label? Is the pale ale hoppy with a good level of bitterness, and is it balanced? Okay, tick, great it is. You know, do we feel like the customer's going to buy that at a relevant price point? Fantastic, let's get it in. If it's not, you know, if it's not hoppy, if it doesn't tick the pale ale boxes, well, maybe we move it on. And, you know, it's hard to have that conversation to tell someone their children are ugly, so... Yeah.
Yes. One of the things, though, is you know, it's quite not trendy to be drinking wine. You know, whereas it's sort of like, you know, particularly over in a meal setting.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You know, it's certainly not not terribly good, you know, to trot down a hot date or whatever and
get out of forex.
Yeah. But how's that? What's happening on that trend?
I think without knowing statistically, if you dig into it, you'll find that the female market's a really big market. And products like Stone & Wood Pacific Ale is a beer that crosses genders really comfortably. Yep. And, you know, at the hotel we see that as a really big selling product, both over the bars, you know, on tap and in package. And I think that's part of the appeal. And, you know, I think, you know, women seem to enjoy beer, which is great. So I don't think there's any issue on going on a date and asking for a cold beer instead of a Sauvignon Blanc.
So. Yeah, and what about sort of from a hotelier perspective? Mm. What's the competition like out there? You know, because you guys have sort of been looking to get a clientele with patrons. You know, what's the sort of niche there for in terms of, you know, saying, hey, look, we take these boutique beers on?
I think, it's obviously a total package, so you can't be just a boutique beer hotel. I mean, the Grosvenor has live entertainment, DJs, bands, trivia nights, and we reinforce that with curating a really good selection of craft beer that will stimulate people. We turn that over, we'll change that on a seasonal basis. So we'll change up to 7 tap points every three and a half months.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a sort of 6-week process even, you know, to get that rotation going. So provide them with great food, you know, Victorian grass-fed beef, you know, cooked to order and, you know, live music, great atmosphere, good service, and, you know, some cracking craft beers on tap.
Yeah, it seems nice mix.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. Because it's sort of like, you know, you get it over that pubby, you know, the pokies, the basic... You know, 4X or not 4X, BB and whatever on tap or Carlton.
Yep,
you know,
for sure.
And what about, is there sort of like, can you make a buck out of that sort of niche? Because it's sort of like, it's sort of you know, pushing the pokies to one side. And
I think what it allows, you know, again, without getting too technical and boring, everyone knows what a six-pack of VB costs and a slab of Carlton draft costs. So it's really benchmarkable. You know, you can go to Dan's, you can go anywhere else. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to swear. you know, and get that slab or that six-pack, whereas a craft beer six-pack is much less benchmarkable. And so, you know, if you've built some confidence in your customer where they can turn and go, oh, I love pale ales, what should I have? Yeah, great, you know, pick up this Newstead pale ale from New South Wales, pick up a six-pack of, you know, Young Henry's Newtowner, you know, lager, then... You know, whether that's $22 or $23 a six pack, it's worth every cent. It's a really good drink, and you know the bigger boys don't carry it. They're not nimble enough and not able to play in that market. They need to buy five pallets or something and distribute it. These guys only make a pallet a month. Yep. So yeah, no, definitely definitely something there for us all.
All right, you're listening to Cravings on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
In the studio is Alex Kavanagh, head chef of Arbury, and Alistair Dobbs from the Grosvenor Hotel on Brighton Road. Joining us on the phone is a lady known as the Beer Diva, Kiralee Waldron. How are you this afternoon?
I'm well, thank you. I'll be doing a bit better than Pete today.
Oh, he's at home. A little bit of concrete, but that's okay. So just a quick intro. You are the Beer Diva. You're a beer presenter, an educator, consultant, writer, a judge, and the list goes on and on. You've got 15 years of experience in the industry. And
I just love beer.
And you're going to knock my hops off, apparently. So
apparently.
And welcome to you.
Have you ever had that happen before?
I'm up for anything twice. Yeah.
Okay.
So you're judging today, my dear, yes?
Yes, yeah. We've been judging for the last 3 days, actually, at the Melbourne Showgrounds for the Australian International Beer Awards. So there's been 60 judges, a whole crew of amazing stewards as well, and we've judged over 1,700 beers in the last 3 days.
Ooh, you must feel full.
We're hardcore, yes. Well, you have to actually drink the beer to judge it. So
you're not allowed to spit like wine.
No, we don't spit like wine, people. No.
Oh, you're
so there you go.
Tough. How did you get into beer? Like, you're a pleasant lady, and you know you don't get around. I'm not going to be.
The normal stereotype, I guess, do I? But look, there's actually quite a few female beer judges here today as well. But I don't know. I always liked beer, and I lived in England for 8 years, so their beer culture is fairly strong with all their local little village pubs and breweries. And I just brought that back with me, I guess, that love of beer, and then worked for one of the major breweries, and about 8 years ago decided I wanted to flap my independent wings and go and just, you know, start changing the view, changing the story of beer. I think it gets a bad rap sometimes in Australia, and obviously with the revolution of craft beer now, people are really starting to look at it differently, which is great.
Yep. With Beer Week and that, our Beer Week on this week, we look at trends and movements in the industry. How important are these trends? And we've spoken to Alistair Dobbs in here from the Grosvenor, and we've spoken about trends. How important is it for you, this sustainability of craft beer?
It's really important to everyone employed in beer industry, of course, and it's not just the brewers, us, the consultants, but it's, you know, venue staff and bar managers and farmers as well. So, look, I think the growth in beer, in craft beer particularly, has been fantastic. And we do see trends in styles and flavours. There's a big push towards sours and fruit beers now, but there's also a bit of a sway back towards some of those more sessionable styles. So I think beer is sort of finding its, you know, its resting point, and people are always now looking for, I guess, that extra bit of flavour in their beer. So we're seeing this overall trend of drink less but drink better. So, you know, actually choose beers for their flavour rather than to just knock them back, which has been the trend for the last 30 years.
Hey, Kiralee, it's Ian. Could you tell me what you're looking for when you judge?
Okay. Well, we judge, so we mark out of 20. So it's fairly similar to wine, I guess, in terms of judging. We look at the appearance of the beer. So is it the style in terms of how it looks? And then we look at the aroma, the taste and the body. And then is it in style? So is it in keeping with the style guidelines? So there's over 100 different beer style guidelines that we judge against. And then just balance, you know, it's good drinkability and flavour. That's ultimately what we're looking for. You know, if we went to a pub and ordered one of these beers, could we sit down and really enjoy it? You know, that's where the gold medals, I think, really come into play, is does it have that level of just good drinkability?
And what are you seeing in terms of, you know, the trend over time? You know, how, I don't know, how long have you been judging?
I've been judging for about 4 years now. And so,
what are you seeing in terms of, you know, are you seeing the industry sort of evolve in a way you'd like?
Yeah, oh, look, definitely. You know, the beers are getting better and better as time goes on. And I guess just as some of the newer brewers in brewing are learning and refining their skills, you know, everyone's moving on. So the quality of the beer is really great. I mean, I guess what we're seeing is certainly hops. So adding those beautiful aromas and bitterness to beer, they're still very trendy. So today, for instance, you know, pretty much every table we're judging some form of international or Australian pale ale, which are those sort of more hop-driven beers, and then the India pale ales, which are even that, you know, extra level of hops and a bit more alcohol. So, you know, there was a lot of time spent on those beers. But, I mean, yesterday I judged fruit and spice beers. So we were judging barrel-aged beers. We were judging Japanese beers that had mandarin added to them, all sorts of interesting stuff going on as well.
It's Alistair from the Grosvenor Hotel. How are you?
Hi, Alistair. Good, thanks.
Sounds like the worst job in the world, and I know having tasted wine for a long time, it's just not as glamorous as it sounds. Hey, I was really interested. You said that you're not, there's no spittoons in sight down there.
No.
So you're swallowing the beer, what, to gain an idea of the level of bitterness, or how does that... Is that what
it's primarily.
Yep.
Yeah, because of where you perceive bitterness on the palate is that sort of mid-back palate. And that bitterness actually takes a few seconds to really show itself. So you have this lingering bitterness, I guess, in the way you talk about length in wine.
Yep. So like a good tonic water.
Without swallowing it, you actually lose that whole level of flavour. So we are putting our bodies on the line when we're judging.
Yeah,
literally.
Whenever I see a craft brewery walk through the door at the hotel at 10 a.m. in the morning, I think, oh, here we go. It's going to be a long day. At least with the wines,
you're not allowed to spit it out.
At least with the wines, I can get away with a spittoon. But yeah, that bitterness I find is one of those defining factors in really good pale ales, and sometimes even a fault in some of the other beers that you find.
Yeah,
you find that latent.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it comes down to that balance as well. If you haven't got that sort of sweet malt balance, then the bitterness, I always say there's nothing worse than tasting something when it feels like you've chewed an aspirin and it just sits at the back of your mouth.
Yeah,
you need that sweet malt character to really come through and carry that bitterness as well. But then you get all hop-heady and addicted to more bitterness.
Hops is where it's at, isn't it? Everyone just wants more hops, and
absolutely.
Aficionados are they're just digging on alpha hops, cascade hops, you name it, they're there.
Yes.
For sure.
Great for the hop industry, but also, you know, there's not enough hops.
There's not
now,
enough hops.
So,
good investment opportunity, I think.
Absolutely. If you live in a climate that can grow hops, I'd be planting.
Not wrong.
Now, you said there's a shortage of hops. There's also a shortage of ladies drinking good beer. You head up Barley's Angels, correct, in Australia?
We've sort of integrated that now into Pink Boots, which is an Australian, it's in part of an international body. So Pink Boots Society is an organisation that not for profit, but we are basically have been created to support women who work in the beer industry. So we get together with a lot of the other female brewers or the people that work in beer. We brew collaboratively, we run events, and any of the profits from those events or brews go into scholarship and grant funds. So then women who work in the industry can apply for scholarships to do, you know, anything we deem is going to sort of take beer and women forward. give them some money, and they go often do it. So, but we also run a lot of events tailored to women. I've got a couple for Good Beer Week. I'm doing a fashion parade where I'm matching beer to fashion, which is a big passion of mine. So that's, you know, whilst it's not female dominated or female only, it's definitely something that would appeal to women.
So it's more so industry people, not the consumption of. So you're not you don't get a heap of ladies together on a bus and open up some kegs and appreciate some good beer.
And have a keg party. look, we do that when we're doing these collaborative brews or you know any of the events we run. Obviously, they're open to women in the public. So you know it's all about education as well. So that's something we love to do is really educate and open minds. I think you know beer's been stereotyped for so long in the country as being something very blokey, very masculine. You know, you stand around the barbie with your
And stubby. Is it growing quickly, like the women involved in the industry, like craft brewing?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, obviously would love to see it grow more. But, yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot more women involved in beer in various different roles. Every year there's more and more women represented, at, you know, particularly even for the judging downstairs. You know, one judge was saying yesterday, he said, I couldn't believe that on the table of six, there were four women and two men judging, which is great.
Would it have a lot to do with your, like, a female's palate compared to a male's palate? Is there a difference in what a lady would taste or feel or get the bitterness of compared to a man or, you know,
definitely. So women are definitely more perceptive to bitterness. I always say we're no more bitter, but we perceive bitterness at a higher level. And
that's
and
a show at 5 o'clock tonight anyway. It's a different show at 5 o'clock,
It was it? Okay. the bitterness is something that as humans we have to accept in our diet. Most children will reject it because it's instinctively anything that's bitter is poisonous. So there's no other animal that will accept bitterness into their diet apart from humans, but we have to teach ourselves to like it. And for women it's even harder because we perceive it at that extra, you know, strength of bitterness. So often that can be off-putting, but there are so many beers that don't have, you know, virtually no level of bitterness anyway. So, you know, there's a beer for every woman. I say if a woman says she doesn't like beer, it's only because she doesn't know she likes beer. Yep. She hasn't found the right one yet.
Very good. Well, we know you're busy and you're down there tasting 1,700 different beers and just having an absolute ball by the sound of it. We're going to let you go and thank you for your time and have a good beer week.
Thank you. You too. Come to some of the events and enjoy good beer.
Will do.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Hi, I'm Heston Blumenthal. You're with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Another one who doesn't know the difference between Pete and myself, and I'm going to take the compliments all day. Next Saturday, we mentioned before, down at the Arbury on the river, they have Nothing is Finer Than Making Beer and Cider. And I had to get my lips around that. Again, pardon the pun. Cider's just like fruity beer, right?
I believe so. Is it a slightly different brewing process?
Yeah, definitely different process. And I think you've probably just gone to the number one on the hate list of cider makers. But, it's a pretty passionate commitment cider. It's, these guys are, using really old New South and doing some pretty interesting stuff. Yeah, some of the principles are the same, but maybe more closer to wine.
Yep.
Sparkling wine making.
Okay. And you're teaming up with Callum, who we're going to have on the phone very shortly, and his brother Nat from Golden Axe Cider and Kiaju Beer. And they're going to take you on a journey of how to make beer and cider and how it's evolved into the forms they are today. You'll have the opportunity to get your hands on as they go through the process of making cider from crushing fruit through to pressing out of the juice and adding yeast. On the phone is Mr. Callum Reeves himself. Good afternoon, Mr. Reeves.
Good afternoon.
You're expecting Pete Dillon as well, I gather.
Well, I was expecting Pete, but I understand I've got Nathan, and that's just as good for me.
Yep, I've heard that before. In this, we've got Alex Kavanagh, who you're going to be doing some work with down at the Arbory during Good Beer Week, and Alistair Dobbs from the Grosvenor in St Kilda is in the studio as well. So,
hey, guys.
Hey, guys. Hey. How are you?
You're teaming up with some good chefs to do some good food, match with good beer and cider. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Also on the day we're going to be making some cider. So we've got Cade Butler from Home Make It, which is a home brewing and winemaking store. He's going to bring down some crushing and pressing equipment, and we'll press out some juice, add some yeast, and then ferment it out, and we'll make it into cider, and then bring it back to the venue for people to come and have some a few weeks later. So yeah, really looking forward to it. We don't usually make cider on such a small scale, so it'll be something a bit different and fun for us as well.
So what are they going to be the challenges for yourself? And you mentioned on a small scale. What are the other challenges? You've standing on those apples and crushing the juice out with your bare feet. Is that the process?
Well, for us, not usually. We can give that a go. But I think it's sort of a little bit different with apples compared to grapes, where just standing on it doesn't really apply the right kind of force. We have good friends out in Officer, Summer Snow, and I used to play in a band with one of the guys from Summer Snow Orchard. They make apple juice. They press apple juice, and so we usually use their juice to make our cider. So my challenges are usually making sure that I keep the temperature right and that we're selecting the best juice and that sort of stuff for our cider. But this is certainly a lot more mechanical and hands-on.
So it's Alistair from the Grosvenor. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm just interested, what varieties of apples will you use to make it, or what do you normally use? Because I know there's some pretty obscure ones, and if you have, you know, cider from France and you try and eat that apple before it's cider, it's just terrible. And I think there's a reason they invented cider.
Yeah, well, look, the apples that we get, I mean, we kind of need a consistent supply of apples.
Yep.
And it is really hard in Australia to get the traditional cider varieties. They just get those bitter sharp and those kinds of varieties, which are basically inedible from the tree. But once you turn them into cider, they become, you know, they can be really nice and complex and really, really good ciders. But for us, it'd be really hard to consistently get the supply of the juice to make that cider. So generally what we go for is whatever's best, as in, best season, at the time of production. Yeah.
Right.
I really like getting new Royal Galas when they've just been picked. They're beautiful to make cider with as an eating apple. We do, because we do really have to choose the eating apple. So, but you know, Royal Gala is a favourite. There's often a bit of Granny Smith in there. It does add a little bit of more of a kind of an acidity in there, which gives you a nice crisp kind of character to the cider. So that you can have that bit of sweetness in there. We have a sort of a mild sweetness. I call it
semi-dry kind of.
Yeah, yep. It's a semi-dry kind of a cider, Golden Axe, and so the grannies do add that little extra tart kind of element. It's not a huge thing, because they're still a much sweeter variety than most of the they're much more edibly sweet than most cider varieties.
Yeah, for sure. Some of those cider ones are pretty wacky.
yeah, that's right.
So long has it been brewing now, Callum?
We've been making the cider commercially for 3.5 years. We started making beers a year after that, as Monster Mash, and now and then we had to change to Kaiju beer. So 2.5 years we've been doing the beers, but we started home brewing many years before that. I probably did my first home brew when I was about 18. thankfully, my brother is the brewer now because he's a far better brewer than I am. So he brews the beers. I make the cider, and it works well for us. But today is actually quite an interesting one. We're actually on the party bus on the way out to our brewery for our brew day, and we're halfway there, and the bus has had a flat.
Oh, so, I didn't get my invite either, so I'll be talking to Summer.
Pete got that.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have been getting a beer if you'd been on the bus, unfortunately.
Oh, that's why I was unavailable. The styles and styles of your beers, like you look at the graphics, and if you get a chance, jump on the kaiajubeer.com.au and check out the graphic. Who's in charge of those? Is that after a few late ones?
Oh, the graphics.
Yeah, the graphics for your bottles. What's going on there?
We have a designer whose name's Mikey Burton, and he's out. He's based in New York at the moment. He's an American guy, and my wife, who's a computer game developer, had really liked his work and suggested him to us as a designer when we decided to do the cider, and the work that he came up with was just so good that. But we never even thought of using anyone else for the beers. These days, when we have an idea for a beer, we generally will send him a story about the beer. We'll tell him the style, and we'll just say, "This is the story." And it's not, generally we don't like to be too descriptive on the label because I think I've read too many wine labels in my time that just say nonsense. So might as well just take it to the next level and be complete nonsense. It's a nice little story about the beers, and then he just comes back with some options for us, and they're always outstanding.
I'm one that gets shot. I go into a bottle shop or into the local place to buy our drinks for the weekend, and I look at a label, and I'll have Pete standing beside me, and I go, "Oh, that one looks pretty," and he goes, "I always judge the book by its cover." Because if you're going to put good products into a bottle, you may as well have a good label. So if you've got a bad label,
it's... What else do you have to go on when you walk into a bottle shop, aside from what it looks like? If you haven't tasted it before and if you're not as experienced with the brewery or the winery or the cidery, it's all you have to really go on is do I like that label or that image? But I mean, from a completely selfish point of view, the label design is probably the most fun and exciting part of the job.
There's no doubt about it.
I
reckon
it's like Christmas in there, right?
Quite often the fridges at the Grosvenor bottle shop look like a bad acid trip. there's that many craft brewery labels in there, and you're right. I mean, if you can't get a hold of someone that actually knows what they're on about because they're busy with someone else, well, you've just got to look at a label and go, yeah, that appeals to me.
And all of a sudden Melbourne Bitter stands out.
Oh, no.
I thought we weren't going to swear on the show.
No, it's
a very, very important part, the labelling. And Kaiju, fantastic.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah, well, we've recently changed it up a bit, and we've got a few of our beers in a smaller package as well, and I guess it's given our designer even more freedom to do really fun stuff with the four packs and the boxes and the labels as I say, really good, really fun part of the process. And I believe and we make sure that the quality of the beer also stands up to the quality of the label.
Totally.
Excellent. Well, we're going to let you get back to putting your lips on the little valve there and blowing your tie back up so the bus can continue on its journey.
Okay.
Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll catch up soon.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks, mate.
See you later. Bye.
And that was Callum Rees, founder and brewer at Kaiju Beer and Golden Axe Cider. Some good stuff.
Oh, very much so.
And you've got looking forward to
We are
next
indeed.
Weekend.
Hopefully we'll get another good Saturday like today.
G'day, I'm Pete Evans, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
And you're back with Cravings, and I'm still not Pete Dillon, but I'll try. We've had a lovely time here. I'm quite dry in the mouth talking all this beer. First experiences with beer? Alistair?
Drinking a shandy with mum and dad, for sure.
Yeah? At the age of?
It's confession time. Don't want to drop mum and dad in it because they're listening. Yeah. 16.
16?
Yeah, it was actually a shandy as well after some picking up of hay bales. So once I could do that, I was allowed a beer. And
pick up a hay bale.
There you go.
I was told once I was taller than the fridge, but it started early. I was born and raised in pubs around, so at a young age.
You can. Fridge.
Yeah, I could pour a beer at 4 quite comfortably.
It's great.
Didn't like the taste till I was 34, but yeah, it was quite good.
In there.
That's it. Persistence.
Very good. You got anything to throw in there, Ian?
No, I just enjoyed talking with you guys. It's interesting where the craft beer breweries are going.
Yeah.
One of the questions I had with, with Cunham was the emergence of ciders. Because I think, is it true that sort of females are starting to really...
Well, I think cider's always been there. I think back to, days drinking back at, Norton's at Melbourne University. I can remember cider being on tap there back in the 90s. So it's clearly always been there.
But it's a little bit more than that. It seems like it's one of those sort of a beery type of drink that females are starting to migrate to. It's sort of as an it's a little bit of an alternative to wine,
stepping stone from wine to beer,
a gateway product sort of. I mean, I think the fact that it's on tap in most hotels is definitely a reflection of that. I mean, we change cider every quarter, and at the moment it's Barossa Valley organic cider makers, really small producer. Before that it was Young Henry's Cloudy out of New South Wales.
And so, does price have any indication on trends? Like if you're going to go and have a glass of Riesling,
I think there's an acceptance that craft beer is a little bit more expensive than commercial beer, and therefore the ceiling is not as, it's higher than it would be on commercial beer. And that I think that applies to cider as well. If you're going to pour a mainstream cider in your hotel or your bar, then you can expect some resistance if you're going to charge for it. But if you're going to produce... if you're going to pour a cider, that is from a small producer made, of apples that are only available a certain time during the season, I reckon customers are extremely well educated. They're extremely savvy online and they get that, and as long as the product's presented in a clean glass that's chilled, served by someone who knows what they're doing, then, no dramas. Go for it, have some fun, drink a good product. No preservatives, low sugar contents. So, cider in particular is a very, very clean product for us.
Is there a craft beer that we should keep an eye out on? I'll run around here and ask everyone if there's something that that's favourable, that you just have to have. It's a fallback.
For me, and I see a lot of craft beer, and some weeks I probably have 20 breweries knock on the front door. One that always stands out for me is Barrow Boys as a producer. Always liked their beer from the day I met them, and it's just getting better, better and better, and whatever they do is always good. Who else? XPA, so Wolf of the Willows, I think is fantastic. Their XPA is a really defining beer. Their Saison is brilliant and punchy and flavoursome. So, there's two I'd be drinking this weekend. Yep.
And Alex, when you're making the burgers down there, you have a little coffee on the side.
A bit of Arbury Brown Ale, one that we got together with Kettle Green Breweries, and the exec chef, Nick Bennett, and some of the bar managers went down and made with their brewer. So
do you have that on tap, or is that...
Yep, we have that running on tap at the moment. Tap. It's quite a nice mellow brown ale, I guess.
Mellow brown.
Not too overpowering. Goes very well with the double cheese.
Excellent.
Yeah, beer and burgers.
Beer
definitely,
and burgers.
Definitely the way to go.
I know.
Very good. And for me, no, I'm
thirsty.
Yeah, bogues.
I remember years ago I was living in Perth, and we used to drive up the road just a little bit and into Little Creatures, and I'd sit there on a Sunday afternoon and have pale ale with salt and pepper calamari.
What a great spot.
On a Sunday afternoon.
In Fremantle.
And Frio. What a beautiful spot.
The wind
spot.
Blowing through. It's brilliant, isn't it, there?
Well, boys, it's been a pleasure. It feels like we've sat at the bar and enjoyed these few frothies until I get home and get breath tested. Thank you very much for coming in.
Pleasure. No, thank you. Thanks
all
for having me.
All the best down at the Grosvenor.
Yep.
And good luck for your next couple of events for the Good Beer Week.
Thank you.
The Arbory. So if you're stumbling to either place, they are both worth a decent look and get a taxi. And thank you, Ian, for panelling. And I'm Nathan Miller, not Pete Dillon, and this has been Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.